want you to take a look at a few pictures and see if you can find the common thread in them. Well, that's, there we go. What would you say? Is there a thread there amongst all those pictures? Want to guess? Ruins. They're ruins, right? Yeah. This is the ruins of Delphi in Greece, one of the most important sacred sites in ancient Greece. This one I don't remember. I never did bother checking this one out here. This is the ruins of my control here isn't working so great. This is the ruins of Troy. For many years thought is a mythical city, didn't even really exist, but they did discover Troy. Not sure exactly what this is, but it's obviously a roadway of some type, right? Of an ancient city. They're ruins. Ruins are usually associated with places that are long ago forgotten, like Delphi and Troy, ancient cities that have fallen into neglect either through earthquakes or war or just people moving away and forgetting about these places. There may be environmental changes that have caused changes in the climate that have caused people to move away and leave places of habitation from the past. But you know, ruins don't have to be old, however. That's the ruins of an earthquake in Turkey that just happened recently. Another view of ruins in Turkey. This is the ruins from the war in Gaza. It's hard to tell the difference, actually, for me, between war and earthquakes. This is the, here are the ruins of Mariupol in Ukraine, after a lot of fighting there. You know, it's interesting, we think of ruins as being old, but they actually can be pretty new. You can have ruins in Cambridge or Kitchener, wherever you're from. There are ruins around us all the time. You know, there's something about the human being, too, that we kind of like apocalyptic stories, stories of doom and gloom. You know, this is a vision of a tidal wave. There's this, in the very depths of a human existence, in our minds, our psyche, there's this fear of the great tidal wave that will overwhelm everything. You see an example of that. If you go online, you'll see lots of diagrams, people doing pictures of these gigantic, enormous tidal waves that are just going to deluge on people's habitation, destroy at immense levels, and leave incredible ruins. You know, sometimes we get ruins not through earthquakes or wars, but through floods too, or tsunamis. Think about the tsunami that rippled through about 20 years ago through Indonesia. That's my first real contact with tsunamis. I didn't even know the word existed till then. Ruins, there's a definition for ruins, and it's this. They are the parts of something that it remained after it has been severely damaged or weakened. That's the definition of a ruin. And ancient and modern ruins share some common features. They have embedded in them a sense of destruction and desolation. There's a suffering that often goes with it, too. Human suffering, maybe suffering of animals, too. Ruins also show the lack of habitation, especially human habitation. Where there are ruins, there usually aren't human beings living there. There's usually no human life among ruins. Ruins can apply to more modest situations or even be used in a metaphorical sense as well. For instance, he stood very still, staring at the ruins of his work. We can talk about the ruins of a shattered life or the ruins of a false accusation. Someone's life can be destroyed by false accusations. We often see a political career ruined through scandal. Ruins are not only realities that live in the outer world, too. Ruins can occur in a very personal sense as well. Your life can be ruined in many different ways. You lose an important relationship through death or separation, and it can lead to deep grief or suffering. You find your life in a state of ruins in those circumstances, often. Maybe you lose an important artifact that's been given to you. A family treasure has been lost. Something so dear to you, and you're thrown into an experience of desolation, and you live amongst the ruins of your loss. Maybe you get fired from an important job that you've always wanted, or maybe you retire from work after 40 years, and now you struggle to live in the ruins of your current life. An important investment goes bankrupt and you stare into the financial ruin of your future. Some people have health impacts that severely shape their reality going forward. Maybe you've had something happen to your health, or maybe you know someone and they've lost their sense of freedom, their personal freedom. And you can see also that they're in a lot of chronic pain. What was once easy becomes so hard. And you can see that their life has fallen into a type of ruins because of their health challenge. Maybe you lose connection with something that was very important to you. People lose their faith in something or someone. That can be very debilitating. You become lost on the inside. You live in the inner ruins of life. You know, we're constantly confronted with destructive forces. We all know this. These destructive forces can thwart life in the outer world and the inner world. The ruins of the outer world are clearly recognizable, but the ruins of the inner world are sometimes harder to recognize. Whether they are events, inner or outer, they can all lead to ruins. They happen to us. They're unavoidable. There's nothing ultimately that can be done about it. Ruins are a part of life. Where there is life, there will also be ruins. Outer ruins and inner ruins. I remember one of my cousins got lung cancer at the age of 30 years old. She didn't smoke or do anything that would make her susceptible to cancer, to lung cancer. And yet there she was struggling with the reality of cancer. It seemed so unfair to us. And she was living in the ruins of her former health. A peaceful community is suddenly set upon by a band of roving marauders, and they are plundered. And everything they've worked for is taken from them. Perhaps even their children have been taken, and they live in the ruins of their circumstances. A scam call comes to a confused elderly person, and they fall for the belief that this is one of their grandchildren who's calling them, and this grandchild is in trouble. And so they wire thousands of dollars to help someone they love, only to find out later that they've been deceived. And they live in the ruins of their treachery. These situations in life happen again and again and again, and they lead us at times into ruins. Our lives become ruined at times, outwards and inwards. And when these moments come to us, what are we to do? We're going to embark on a 5-week series here at Trillium called Rebuilding from Ruins. Rebuilding from Ruins. And this series is going to focus on the story of Ezra in the Old Testament. Ezra is a story that doesn't get told a lot, as Doug was saying. I don't think he's ever read Ezra in church. It doesn't get read in a lot of churches these days. But it holds important lessons for our lives, important lessons on how to rebuild ourselves from the ruins of our experiences. Physical ruins, but also spiritual ruins too. Emotional ruins, mental ruins, financial ruins, social ruins. Now, in order to understand Ezra, I want to take you back a little bit and go through the story that leads up to Ezra. And so we have to go back quite a ways. I'm just going to quickly go through these. The story begins with Abraham, which is about 1,500 years earlier. Abraham lived in the city of Ur in Mesopotamia, which is modern Iraq. And actually, Abraham's father was called out of that land to go to the promised land. He had been given a vision of a promised land, but unfortunately, Abraham's father did not complete the journey. He stopped halfway, and so the vision was given to Abraham, and he ultimately journeyed to Canaan. Remember that name, Canaan. And of course, Abraham had a son named Isaac, and Isaac had two sons, Esau and Jacob. Jacob is the one that we focus on. Jacob is also known today as Israel. See, he had a struggle with God, and he was renamed by God, and Jacob's name was transferred from Jacob to Israel. And Jacob had 12 sons, including Joseph. And we know, many of us, Joseph because of the Technicolor Dreamcoat, that great music drama, and the songs and the music come out of it, the multicolored coat that he wore. The story of Joseph is really about how Jacob and his family enters into Egypt. That's really what the point of the story is. It's to explain how people of Israel get into Egypt. And when they get to Egypt, ultimately, they are made slaves. That's the story post-Joseph. And then the story of Moses is how Israel is taken out of Egypt, back to Canaan. The story of Joshua is how Israel comes into Canaan. And the story of David is about how the reign and rule of Israel is strengthened in Canaan, ultimately to the point where David establishes a vast kingdom that goes far beyond the realms of Canaan. And then the story of 2 Kings is how Israel, the 12 tribes, split into two. A smaller kingdom called Judah, made up of Judah and Benjamin, and the 10 northern tribes that go on their own. They're no longer one nation anymore. There are two peoples, two nations. And the story of Kings continues. The northern kingdom of 10 tribes are ultimately conquered by the Assyrians out of modern Iraq. They are taken away, they're deported, and they disappear from history. They're gone forever. And only Judah remains. And then at the end of 2 Kings, it ends with the destruction of Judah as a people, at least as a country, as a nation. The collapse of Jerusalem, the destruction of the temple. They're taken away by the Babylonians to a foreign land, and this becomes the story of the Jewish captivity. No longer is Judah allowed to be living in the land of Canaan anymore. There's a wall between them. They're no longer permitted. They're not permitted by the kings of Babylon to go back to Canaan. They're forever sundered from the land, it seems. And this is where the story of Ezra begins. It's the call to go back home to Canaan. So I don't know if you'll remember this, so we're going to test you on it, okay? Yeah. But it's important that you know the backstory, because if you don't know the backstory, you're not going to have any clue about what's so important going on in this. Remember, Abraham, he goes to Canaan. From Canaan, his grandson Jacob goes to Egypt. In Egypt, the people of Jacob, which are called Israel, are made into slaves in Egypt. Ultimately, God sends a messenger called Moses to take the people of Israel out of Egypt, back into the land of Canaan. And in Canaan, for a brief period of time, there's a flourishing kingdom of Israel, and then it breaks apart in its political struggles, and ultimately the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom are destroyed, and the people of Judah, the one last tribe of all the people of Israel, find themselves on the banks of the Euphrates River in a foreign land, and they're trying to figure out how they got there. Because see, that's the main story of the Old Testament. How does God's chosen and blessed people end up in ruins? How could such a gifted nation, living under the providential care of God, end up on Skid Row? How could God's chosen people find themselves living in the ruins of life by the rivers of Babylon, completely sundered from their heritage, their lives shattered, both practically and metaphorically speaking? How does a chosen people end up in a lifeless, barren reality? And what happens when one finds oneself living in the ruins of life? That's why this story matters to us today. Because you live in ruins, you have at least. You might live today in ruins, and you will definitely at some point in your future live in ruins. As Samo was talking about, you know, it's going to come to us, all of us. And the big question in the Bible is, where is God when we find ourselves in the ruins of life? That's what the people of Judah are asking themselves at the very beginning of Ezra. Are we now God's forsaken people? We were once God's chosen people. Are we now God's forsaken people? Where is God in all this? Does God even exist? What is God's intention for us as a people? What is our future? Do we have a future? How does one rebuild from calamity? Where does one build from calamity? These are all basic existential questions, and they make any of us shiver to the core when we face them. I know many of the stories of your life. I don't know everything about your life, but I know some of the stories of your life. Of course, I'm not going to tell them right now, but I know your stories. And I know some of you are living in the ruins of your life right at this moment. Or you've lived in ruins in your past. And we all know that every one of us is going to live in ruins in the future someday. Maybe not even the too distant future. Who can really tell after all? I was talking with a person recently whose spouse had gotten very sick, and this spouse can't work anymore. And this couple can't afford to live in Ontario. It's too expensive to live here. So they're going to have to sell their house in Cambridge and move to another part of the country. A part of the country they can afford to live in. And when they're telling me the story, I can see the pain in this person's demeanor. They're sad about this. They're sharing the story about giving up so much that they treasure here. All the rich connections, families and friends, the familiar world they know, they're going to have to make a new start somewhere else in life. They're going to have to start all over again, give up on all that they've created here. And I certainly got a sense that they were living in the ruins of their hopes and dreams. They had one plan, but now it was shattered by the realities of the spouse's sickness. Sally and I sometimes, my wife Sally, if you don't know her, and I sometimes talk about what life might look like someday if one of us dies. Ever had that conversation with your spouse? I mean today, or maybe in the past, or maybe you'll have one in the future with them, but do you ever talk about that with them? And I don't mean practically speaking, like how I'm going to manage the bank account, or how Sally's going to pay the bills, or whatever. I mean in the heart. It's hard for me to imagine life without Sally. What would I do? I met a neighbor up the street, just up the street from us, who lost his wife of many years. He was literally walking about in the ruins of his heart. He was devastated, crushed by her death. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm talking to him, what's going to happen to me someday when Sally dies? See, because in my imagination, it's always Sally that dies first, right? Yeah. I don't know what for Sally, whether I die first, but I'm not sure, actually. But in my imagination, it's always Sally dying first. Because if I die first, I don't have any problems, right? Sally's got the problems. And I see older couples in the church here, you know? And I wonder how you're going to make it on your own when your spouse dies. You ever wonder about that? Again, not just practically. I mean in the heart. How are you going to make it in the heart? And then there are some of you here that have gone through that event. You've lost your spouse through divorce or through death. And you're living on your own. For some of you, it was hard, right? You had a desolation. For some people, actually, when their spouse dies, it's a form of liberation. I know it's not very politically correct to say it, but there are some people who feel liberated when their spouse dies. But for many of us, we might feel desolate when our spouse dies. And even if you're liberated, you still live in the ruins of your spouse's death. There's no avoiding it. And you don't have to be married to experience this. You might have a special person in your life, maybe a sister or a brother, a close friend, a parent, a child. When they go, for whatever reason, they move away, they die, you get separated, you get asundered from them, your life has shifted in a powerful way, and you can easily find yourself living in the ruins of your heart. Some people live in the ruins and they don't even know why they're there. That's maybe the hardest of all. They live in the ruins, but they don't understand the underlying cause of their desolation. Now, some of you may be thinking I'm going too long about this thing, about this ruins thing. Yeah, we get it. You don't need to keep going over this again. But I think we spend our whole lives running away from the ruins of our lives and running away from situations that might cause ruins. I think we don't invest ourselves in things because we're not confident they'll endure past us. And so we don't even bother trying. I think we do everything we can to avoid these moments because we're afraid of the ruins. Who wants to live in ruins? Who can live in ruins, really? See, the thing is this, that if you invest in anything in this world, it's ultimately going to end up in ruins. There's nothing permanent in this world. There's nothing permanent. Whatever we build in this world, whatever it is, will ultimately turn to ruins. Doesn't matter what it is. The great empires of the past are all ruins today. The Egyptians, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Han Chinese, the Asoka Empire in India, the Spartans, the Romans, the Aztecs, the Mayans. We didn't even know the Mayans had a civilization for centuries. It's just a recent discovery. There's such a thing as a Mayan civilization. The world is covered in ruins. Every single thing we do in life, ever do in life, whatever accomplishment we set out to do will ultimately end in ruins. Everything will die. Every relationship will die. Everything that we build will ultimately crumble. So why are we doing it then? Why are we doing it? See, what I can't figure out is why these misfit Jews crying their heart out on the rivers of Babylon, why don't they just crawl up and die? Since everything ultimately ends in ruins and they were living in the ruins of their circumstances, why didn't they just crawl up and die? Every other people who'd ever been transplanted in the ancient world, they died. Anybody who had been transported from their homeland to another part of an empire disappeared. There's no one in the ancient world other than the Jews who were forcibly relocated to another land and who managed to endure, managed to survive it. The Jewish people are the only people from the ancient world who survived deportation. Who survived deportation. You know, not even the 10 northern tribes survived. They disappear from history. They're gone. They were deported just like the Jews were, but they're deported. They're gone. No one even knows where they are today. What made Judah different from everyone else? See, that's the story of Ezra. That's what it's about. It's about people who survived the ruins and came back. And that's what we're going to look at over the next 4 weeks, the story of Ezra in more detail. What did they know that allowed them to endure the ruins? How did they go about reconstituting themselves as a people? How did they make it back again from the abyss? And without getting ahead of myself, there's one clear distinction that separates Judah from every other people in the ancient world. They had the voice of God living in their midst. They had the prophets of Yahweh living amongst them. There was never a time when God abandoned them. Never a time when God abandoned them to themselves. The living voice of God was spoken to them in their desolation. God lived in the ruins with them. God lived in the ruins with them. And that is, to me, the essence of the incarnation of God in Jesus. God coming to live in the ruins of our lives. God coming to live in the ruins of human life. God living in the ruins of death. God living in the limits of our human endeavors. The people of Judah had the voice of the living God with them. And the message of the Bible is this: the voice of the living God lives within his people. That we too can have the voice of the living God within us and with us. And every human situation that's imaginable, we can have the voice of God living in us, in the joys of life and in the ruins of life. There is the voice of God going with us. God is with us. We are not alone. A lot of people here today in Trillium are going through hard times. physical hard times, emotional hard times, spiritual hard times, financial hard times, educational hard times, social hard times. You're going through hard times, many of you. You might even be dealing with ruins in your life. That comes when certain things end for us. Whatever it is, know this, that God is with you. It's more than know that God is with you. You can know for yourself today that God is with you. You don't have to take it from me. The living voice of God can live within you. You can know it yourself. You can ask God today to show you that He's here with you in all of your life, every step of the way. At Trillium, we come to awaken the Christ light in each other. We come to awaken the living voice of the Spirit of God in each other. That's the purpose of Trillium. It's the only reason we exist as a church, so that we can come to know in a very intimate way that God is with us, that we don't stand alone in the ruins of life. God is not only with you, but God is ahead of you, preparing the way forward for you, if you let Him. One day Judah is living in captivity under the Babylonians, and the next day the Babylonians are gone. And a new power has arisen immediately, like that. And its first king is called Cyrus, king, the great king of the Persians. And a whole new set of circumstances, a whole new reality is taking shape. A new door is being opened. The story of Ezra begins this way. In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, in order to fulfill the word of the Lord spoken by Jeremiah the prophet, the living voice of God amongst the people, the Lord moved the heart of Cyrus, king of Persia, to make a proclamation throughout his realm and also to put it in writing. The Lord, the God of heaven, has appointed me to build a temple for Him at Jerusalem in Judah. And any of His people among you may go now up to Jerusalem. The world that was cut off from you now is open to you, and you may now go back up to Jerusalem in Judah and build the temple of the Lord, the God of Israel, the God who is in Jerusalem. And may their God be with them. Or put it another way, the days of ruins are coming to an end because God is the ruler of the past, the present, and the future. Let's pray.